Well, good morning, church. We're all standing. I bet you're wondering if I'm going to talk about the general conference session in San Antonio. I'll give you my favorite memory. My favorite memory happened on about the second or third day when I got a phone call from our youngest daughter, Alisa, who lives in Spokane. She's a young adult. She doesn't care too much about church and business session, but she called me and said, "Mama, I keep dreaming every night about the general conference." It was still early in the session. I said, "What are you dreaming?" She said, "I dream that you come back to the house every night and you say, 'Ugh, we did nothing of importance today.'" That was on Thursday. Those were her dreams. This afternoon, after our fellowship meal, we'll spend some time reflecting together about 10 days in San Antonio. We invite you, even if you didn't prepare food, if you want to come and eat a bite of potluck and stay by 1:30, you'll be joined by Larry Garrity, Stephanie McFarland. They were our church members who were delegates, and then Fritz Guy, who was present with a class from the Divinity School. Please come at 1:30 today. Sometimes we live our faith without understanding it, and sometimes we understand our faith without living it. This summer, we're trying to do both. We're trying to understand our faith and live it. If it's worth believing, then it's worth living, and if it's worth living, it ought to make life better. Sometimes we live our faith without understanding it. We have in front of us today this topic of communion and baptism, these rituals we do in community, and I have a very few short minutes to talk about the profound experience of the table. My question is, how did communion get such a bad reputation? Is it just me? Is it just our house? Is it just a few of you? The pastors, we brought this question up a few months ago. If you ask us during the week in the church office, "What's happening this weekend?" and we say, "Communion," you say, "Eh, I need a root canal." How did communion get such a bad reputation? How did this happen to us? Who decided black is the color we wear on this day? Does anyone know the answer? Who decided that it was black? Let me show you my first suit I wore as a pastor of this church. It was July 2000, and it was this charming greenish-blue thing that I wore for 3 weeks in a row. This was my very first pastor suit. I wore it for 3 weeks in a row, and then the calendar said it was going to be communion. And I went, "Oh no, I was raised in the church. I know what happens on communion, and I had a little mentoring, so I needed another suit. So my second suit," right? Black, because we're going to the Lord's table. Black. By the way, most all pastors have at least one black suit, and it doubles for communion and funerals. Who made this decision? How did communion get such a bad reputation? Have you looked in your hymnals? I don't know what was going wrong with the people writing the hymnals. Look at the communion section of your hymnals. There's more sad music in that section than any other section. Kimberly, play us one. Now, Kimberly happens to like the communion music more than I do, but Kimberly will play us just one. She sort of has a sad smile on her face. Black. Right? Almost all the songs for communion sound like that. Like someone lost their puppy or their relationship. And then they wrote a hymn. There's one in the communion section that we seem to know and love that's happy. Number 407. What's that one, Kim? Right? Cheers, right? That's hymn number 407, sent forth by God's blessing. How did communion get such a bad reputation? Would you like to blame it on the church? It's a great week to blame everything on the denomination. Would you like to blame it on the church? Before we do, here's the church manual, page 119. The church manual says, communion should be a sacred and most joyous time for the congregation. In fact, the church manual uses the word joyous three times, and the doctrine written for communion and baptism also uses the word joyous. You cannot blame it on the denomination today. How did communion get this reputation? Even Queen Victoria, the longest reigning of the monarchs, she reigned 63 years. Even Queen Victoria said, especially on Easter Sunday, on such a joyous day, why must we have the sad ceremony of communion? She has company. We have company across time and ages and spaces. How did such a intimate, relational, personal meal with Jesus turn into this? I think it's because we've been listening to every other voice but the voice of Jesus. We get to the communion table usually through the voice of the Apostle Paul. Paul's words we read every communion Sabbath, for I pass on to you that which was given to me, that the night Jesus was betrayed, he took the bread and he blessed it and he said, eat this, it's my body. And in the same manner, he took the cup and after he blessed it, he said, drink this and do this in remembrance of me. Paul says it's a memorial meal. I wonder if our challenge with communion is that we listen to every voice besides Jesus. We don't have to get to communion through the Apostle Paul. If we read a little further those words from Paul that we traditionally repeat here, here's the idea of the problem. We're in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 27. This is why those who eat the bread or drink the cup of the Lord inappropriately will be guilty of the Lord's body and blood. Each individual should test himself or herself and eat from the bread and drink from the cup in that way. Those who eat and drink without correctly understanding the body are eating and drinking their own judgment. Because of this, many of you are weak and you're sick, and quite a few of you have died. And it's only been a couple of decades since Jesus, and now the table is deadly. Here are the ideas, I think, that shape the foundation with communion, the bad reputation with communion. 20 years after Jesus, we've studied here this spring about the community of Corinth. We understand their competing priorities. We understand rituals and rites and sacred traditions. We understand that they are a very well-organized society of unequals. And Jesus is attempting to attempting the community become a group of with shared solidarity and resources, a living, loving testimony of Jesus. We've studied about Corinth. Here is the Apostle Paul working on the requirements with their sloppy agape. Maybe this is why communion challenges so many of us. We come to the table through the words of the Apostle Paul and the community in Corinth. And decades pass, and debates go by with every generation. Every new generation gets to decide, but what does this bread really mean? And what does this cup really do? And how do we know if this is the real presence of Jesus? Then I better get my act together. If I'm consuming this and Jesus is alive with me, if eating the meal brings the reality of Jesus into our fellowship, then we ought to get our act together. Every generation and every decade and every new group of church historians and theologians ask these very questions. The year is now 251 AD after Jesus now. And here's St. Cyprian of Carthage, one of the church fathers. This is what he says about communion. Lapsed Christians will often take communion before their sin is expiated, before their confession, before atonement, before things have been made right. They'll often do this, and their conscience, before their conscience has been purged, before the hand of the priest has touched them, before the offense of an angry and threatening God has been appeased, and violence will be done. We're only a few generations after Jesus. The Christians have become these people who habitually lose their salvation and stand before a priest with an offering, making penance so all things can be right, so we can please the Lord, so that by lunchtime we will have lost it and sinned and will do it all over again. When we come to the table, this is the history we bring with us. What's wrong with communion is that we've listened to every voice but Jesus. Mark chapter 14, here's Jesus. That evening, Jesus arrived with the 12. During the meal, Jesus said, "I assure you, one of you will betray me, someone eating with me now." Deeply saddened, they asked him one by one, "It's not me, is it? It's not me." The answer to that question, the way it's set up, is no, no, no. It's none of you. It's not me, is it? No, 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 no. Jesus answered, "It's one of the 12, one who is dipping bread with me into this bowl. The human one goes to his death, just as it is written about him. But how terrible it is for the person who betrays the human one. It would have been better for him if he'd never been born." While they were eating, please take note of the order of the meal. While they were eating, Jesus took bread, blessed it, broke it, and gave it to them and said, "Take, this is my body." He took a cup and gave thanks, and he gave it to them, and they all drank from it. And he said to them, "This is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many. I assure you that I won't drink wine again until the day when I drink it new, the new way in God's kingdom." After singing songs, they went out to the Mount of Olives. It's one of the few sayings that's in all four of the Gospels. "Truly, one of you will betray me tonight." And while they're sitting around the table chattering about who's ruining the community, Jesus is hosting a meal. Did you catch it? Someone's betraying Jesus and the entree's not even been served. Someone's done terribly wrong. There's no church discipline. There's no disfellowship. There's no convening of a committee to decide what shall we do with this one, Judas. While everyone is chattering about what's wrong with the fellowship of Jesus, Jesus is hosting a meal. What's wrong with communion is that we've listened to every voice but Jesus. Jesus is hosting the meal. We are welcomed and wanted guests, every one of us here today. You are welcomed and wanted at the table with Jesus. We don't come here hiding today. We don't come here pretending today. Yes, we've prettied up and put on our clothes, and we still sit here truthfully broken. Just the way we are like Judas, you are welcomed and wanted at this table today. Rowan Williams, the former Archbishop of Canterbury, says it this way: "The meal is not a reward for doing well, but a confession that we're doing badly. The meal, it's not because we have arrived, it's because we're traveling. Not because we are right, but because we are confused. Not because we are full, but because we are hungry. We take this meal because only Jesus can serve it." Now, many things happened in our church business session in San Antonio, many things that confused and or disappointed and concern us for the future, but among the most concerning of everything that took place the last 10 days in General Conference, and I want you to look at a picture of last Sabbath from the top of the Alamo Dome as the place was packed with worshipers from around the country. The most concerning thing I see happening in our denomination, it talk after talk, devotion after devotion, prayer after prayer led in the general sessions, is that we are still trying to work out our own salvation. For whatever reason, the generosity of God is too much for us. And so it makes me come home, saying, yes, I'm frustrated. Yes, I don't know why it was this way. Yes, there's concern for the future, but I will not give up on Jesus. I will not give up on the generosity of God. When Jesus hosts the table, it means you are all welcome and you are all wanted today, right now. We come to this meal on Jesus' terms, not our own. There is no fixin' of my life that makes this meal more palatable. We come on Jesus' terms. This is not the generous meal of Jesus. It's not just a nice habit Jesus had. It's not just an idea he added on. This is the heart and the mission of God. What God wants, who God is, what God does in the world, we see in Jesus. When we come to this table, it means there's generosity in the neighborhood. When we come to the table, it means mercy and graciousness and righteousness for all. When we come to this table today, we fix our minds on a time when all people will dwell in that peace. And we expect that peace now. We come to this table on Jesus' terms. So if that's our understanding, how do we live this faith today? We come, and we hope, the pastors hope, we'll do this more frequently, not less frequently. We think 4 times a year is not enough, because when I come to the table, it's a detox moment. Can I say it that way? It's a detox moment from the world, from the competing priorities, from all the mixed messages in my life during the week. When I come to the table, I get clear and fixed and focused and grounded again in the generosity of God. I get clear and fixed and focused in the generosity of God from creation, the God who dropped manna on the children of Israel, the God who in Jesus that night went to the cross and settled eternity. We need to come to the table more often. This is the pattern, what the ritual is good for. Come here, detox of the world, drink the cup, eat the bread, be reminded you are wanted by this Jesus. With those of you still feeling extreme frustration, you see this little wristband. After church today, this little wristband will be available. It says, "My church too," Micah 6:8. Because there's a young adult in our congregation who decided to take her energy, her frustration and anger the last 2 weeks and see what it would look like if we frame it in the generosity of Jesus. Grab a wristband after church today when you head over to potluck. It's our church too. We don't walk away from Jesus. We don't walk away from generosity of God. We sit today and we eat the bread and we drink from the cup. And we let the calming peace of God refocus our community. This is what's been wrong with communion. We're listening to everyone but Jesus. Today, we're listening to Jesus.